Send a survey to your customers about what they want and need. Ask in person what they require. Create an ethical bribe to get them to tell you what they want and what they need. Follow relevant trends and data via social media to determine where your clients are clicking and on what sites they're hanging out. Look at the analytics for your website. Identify the particular parts of the site that get the most traffic. Don't pretend to know what your client needs, making guesses without any feedback or data. All of these tactics should help you listen and camp out in their minds. Let them tell you what they want and provide it to them. Reciprocity. What is the definition of reciprocity, and how does it fit in with the after-the-sale relationship? First, in the dictionary, it may say one thing, but I believe in a somewhat different definition. Let's call it no-strings-attached reciprocity. It means providing value to someone else without asking for anything in return or doing something before someone does something for you. Most people think, I'll do something if there's something in it for me. If I help that person, can they help me? I've been blessed to develop amazing relationships with amazing people, doing something for them and expecting nothing in return. When you give to others without the need for them to give back, that is no strings attached reciprocity. It forms the foundation of many successful people and companies. Whether you believe in do unto others as you would have done to you, or karma, be the one who makes the first generous move. Make this who you are rather than how you intend to get ahead. If you do, watch as the gifts, the breakthroughs, the opportunities, and the promotions start flowing your way. Use reciprocity after the yes bonding. Create unexpected rewards for good behaviors. Think about this. How often do you tell your spouse, your kids, your employees, your friends, and your family that they have disappointed you? How often do you share what went wrong, and even possibly what kind of discipline there will be because of it? Conversely, how often do you give a gift or even just a kind word to people who do the right things? When was the last time you said to your spouse, thank you for being such a great provider. Thank you for being such a great mother or father. Or when was the last time you told your kids, thanks for making your bed today. Thanks for being so polite the other night when we went out to dinner and you looked our waitress right in the eyes when you spoke. And it's no different in your business or career. When was the last time you said to your clients, thank you for being a part of our company. Thank you for sticking with us. Thank you for giving us money. Here's a gift to show my appreciation. For example, if you rent one of my 400 houses around the country, when you pay rent on time for the first 6 months, you get a letter that includes a $50 Starbucks card. The letter reads, you have a choice to pay your rent on time or late, and you choose to pay your rent consistently on time, and I just wanted to say thank you. People don't expect the letter or the gift, and they respond in so many positive ways. Tenants stay longer, complain less, and often want to buy the house from me. This letter creates a connection. This isn't trickery. I truly appreciate them, and I let them know it. By doing so, we move beyond being just a tenant and landlord, a purely transactional business arrangement, and build a real relationship. Yes, they are paying me money, and I am providing them a home. That could be enough, a fair exchange. But my ROI on renting single-family homes is significantly above industry standard, and my tenants know that I care even after they give me money. That's your goal. Let the people who have said yes in your business and your personal life know that you care. Here's how. This is a challenge for you that I know will give you back gifts that you can't yet foresee. This week, create 5 handwritten letters of gratitude to people who have made an impact on your life. When was the last time you wrote a handwritten letter? If you can't write legibly, then type it and email it. But let me assure you, the impact of each letter will be incredible. Send them to clients, a mentor, a teacher, your husband, your wife, your mother, your father, your siblings, your children, your employees, your manager, or your boss. Here's an example of a simple, unexpected note of gratitude that you may send. I just wanted to let you know that today I was sitting here thinking about the evolution of my life, and I'm not sure I'd be where I am today without you keeping me accountable, being tough on me, being so sweet, being so loving, providing love in my life, or being a client who pays me for services that we render. And I'd like to say, well, you get the point. You can fill in the blanks and tailor it to a specific individual. Do me a favor and take that challenge this week. Write those letters and mail them. Or if you prefer, write them digitally and email them. Better yet, send a gift with your note. Send flowers to someone with a card and discover how grateful people are to receive an unexpected gift. This is how reciprocity is created. Do this and the emotion of love will come back to you in waves. If you make this sort of selfless gesture in your personal life, why wouldn't you do that in business as well? Why wouldn't you do that with your clients or coworkers? Why wouldn't you do that with your boss? Why wouldn't you do that with your employees? Building reciprocity fosters a long-tail relationship. This means they will use your service, respect you, appreciate you, and refer you for many years to come. This is the opposite of a one-time transaction or a short-term relationship. Building these long-tail relationships is a core success habit of most super successful people. Learn what makes your people tick. If you own your own company and have employees or manage other people in your career who lack motivation or have poor morale, or they're not getting their jobs done for any reason, consider spending some time just trying to understand them and their world. They said yes to working for you or their employer. Focus on how they feel, and you can get results that are unimaginable at this point. What if their obstacles and challenges are nothing like you think they are? What are their goals? What do they talk about at lunch? What do they think of you and your management style? What do they talk about when they go home to their spouse? Now let's flip it around. You said yes to working for another company, and you want to grow in that environment. Say you're in a challenging job with a tough boss. Ask yourself these questions. How does your boss feel about her job? Is he really the arrogant boss who disdains his people, or is he just misunderstood? What are his stresses? What are her worries? What challenges is he facing in his life? How does her boss treat her? You will get a whole new level of understanding if you make the effort to answer these questions. Then use what you've learned to let her feel understood and communicate that you are part of her solution, not part of her problem. Take the same lessons I shared earlier and camp out in the mind of the person you want to work with, and you will see things from a new perspective. Eventually, you might come to know them well enough to finish their sentences. The end result is that you understand how to be a part of their solution, not a part of their problem. Strive for relationships, not transactions. Here is one of the most important success habits shared in this chapter. If you want a next-level business that thrives in today's environment, remember, when it comes to your clients, be in a relationship business, not the transaction business. People will refund a transaction, but not a relationship. Let me explain this quickly. If you have a transactional relationship with the owner of your local diner, you go there and the conversation goes like this. Hey, where do you want to sit? Here's the menu and the specials. What may I get you? He delivers your food with a smile. You eat, get the check, and you leave. Nothing wrong. Food was fine. Yet that's purely transactional. There's no heart and no personal relationship. But what if the owner actually spent time getting to know you and building a relationship? What if the conversation was more like, hey, Dean, good to see you again. How's the family? You guys have to bring the kids in soon. We'll make them those special Sundays again. They sure loved them last time. You want your favorite booth? Green tea, right? Okay, you got it. Now, which of those two restaurants are you most likely going to return to for lunch? Which one would you still go back to if for some crazy reason you had a bad meal occasionally? That's right, the one you have a deeper relationship with. People bail on transactional relationships fast, while they hang tight when it's a real relationship and they know you care. If you're running a business where your relationships with customers are purely transactional, those customers know it. Maybe you're just pushing product through, or you really don't care about sales. Your refunds are high, your customers are complaining, or they're not referring you, or you just can't seem to generate momentum. It's likely because you really don't show you care about your customers on the level that they need to be cared about. Without realizing it, you view customers from a transactional perspective, not from a relationship one. Securing customer loyalty without a relationship is a difficult task in today's connected world. In contrast, if you understand how your customers or clients feel, know where they are coming from, realize how they found you, recognize what they like and don't like about your product, and grasp what their personal needs are, you will develop a bond with them that transcends the transaction. And once again, this builds a long-tail customer rather than a one-time transaction. No more assuming. Another huge problem with after the yes is assuming you know what people are thinking or feeling. We do that in our personal lives as well as business, and it can cost you money as well as create unwarranted stress. Let me share a story that had a huge impact on me and helped me learn this lesson of not pretending you know what another person is thinking, but making the effort to actually know. My first book, Totally Fulfilled, hit the New York Times bestseller list in 2006, and the following year I wrote Be a Real Estate Millionaire. However, this time I did something different in the way I promoted that book. It sold in bookstores and other retail outlets like Totally Fulfilled, but I also did an infomercial selling it directly to consumers. It became a massive hit, my biggest book sales to date. In fact, that first show ran every single day all across America for almost 18 months. We were all over TV selling thousands and thousands of copies of Be a Real Estate Millionaire weekly. But it almost never happened because I assumed I knew what a key team member was thinking. I made a deal to have someone interview me on camera. He was great at it and came highly recommended. At the time, I had already been on TV for 7 or so years with infomercials. But this was the first time I was going to do a sit-down, Larry King-type interview. Watching Larry King interview, Joel Osteen one night gave me the idea to do that type of show. I knew if Larry King would have said, "Love Joel or not, if you want his brand new book, why go to stores? Call the number below and get it at a discount right now." It would have been a massive hit. It became all I could think about. So I was ready to replicate this type of show with a great host, and I found someone I thought would be perfect. I made a deal with him, and a shoot date was set. The day of the shoot, I arrived at the studio, and I was a little nervous, because I wasn't using a script. Instead, I wanted to speak from my heart. I wanted to share real stories and real emotion in an unscripted, back-and-forth interview. Keep in mind that this was at the beginning of the recession. The economy was tanking, mortgages were being foreclosed on, and I was going on TV to sell a book on real estate investing. Everybody told me I was crazy. Friends and even family were telling me, "No one's going to want to figure out how to make money in real estate. People are losing their homes. They just want to survive right now, Dean." I stayed positive and ignored the naysayers and continued on schedule to launch this book and infomercial. What made my nerves even worse was overthinking. On the way to the studio to record the infomercial, I became increasingly anxious. Would I sound good? Would I be able to share from my heart and not freeze up? So I arrived, a bit nervous, walked into the studio, and the TV host kind of snubbed me. I was taken aback initially, and I jumped to a conclusion. This guy thinks I'm crazy for doing this too. Then the TV host said to me, "What questions do you want me to ask you?" I replied, "I really don't want any questions. I just want you to try and prove me wrong. Try and prove that I'm not the real deal, or that I don't know real estate, or that now is not a good time to invest. Let's make this interview as real as they come. If I'm the real deal and speak from the heart, people will feel it." Again, I felt as if he thought I was making a mistake. He gave me a skeptical look and walked straight into the makeup room. It was almost as if he was rejecting my book and my message. And I'll admit, I allowed those feelings to fester inside me. I was upset enough that I was a moment away from canceling the whole interview. I even started thinking, maybe another time, maybe I wasn't prepared enough. I had created a story in my head about this TV host. I was all worked up thinking, this guy doesn't believe I'm the real deal. Does he think this is a joke? I became even more nervous and agitated. Then we sat down on the interview set and he looked at me and said, "Dean, I'm sorry if I'm acting weird. I'm just so intimidated by you. You are so good on camera. You're a damn legend in this arena, and I've been a huge fan for years. I'm excited to do this interview. I'm just a little nervous and unfortunately getting over the flu." Now, what do you think I did? I was stressed for an hour thinking the TV host snubbed me and didn't believe in me. I made up all these stories in my mind about how the host thought I was a joke, and I was flat out wrong. What a waste of mental energy, right? I felt so silly. But at least this story ends well. I went on air and spoke from the heart. He did a magnificent job interviewing me, and this infomercial became the biggest and best show I'd ever done. It was a monster hit. That show alone sold hundreds of thousands of books, and I got to help families all over America safely invest in real estate. So why that story, and what does it have to do with the after-the-sales secrets to more success? Because at the time of that story, I was already a seasoned business owner, a millionaire with many great accomplishments, and lived by the rule of no assuming. Nonetheless, I made assumptions that simply weren't true. So keep reminding yourself of this no assumption rule and recognize that if you're making these types of assumptions, you aren't as relationship focused as you should be for that next level of growth. Think back and ask yourself, how many times have you made the same mistake with a business relationship, a spouse, a child, a coworker, a boss, or an employee? Your mind starts chugging like a runaway freight train, and these wild manufactured thoughts cause all this extra stress in your life for no reason. Well, if it can happen in your personal life, then it can surely happen with your clients. Do you think you know what they are thinking, or do you really know? Do whatever it takes to really know and watch the growth in whatever area of your life to which you apply this philosophy. Chapter 9. The Power of Happiness. As your success, income, and responsibility grows, you can't neglect your happiness. If you are not consciously defending it, it can slip away. I'm going to share with you the 10 happiness habits that can make happiness the core of success rather than success the core of happiness. Yes, you heard that correctly. Happiness leads to success rather than the opposite. In our society, we often think that if we've got tons of money, are the head of a profitable company, and have a lot of fame as well as fortune, we're going to be happy. In fact, one of the biggest things that stops people dead in their tracks from living an actual fulfilled life is the assumption that if they find success, happiness will follow. Take your own life, for example. Have you ever thought that if you got a certain job or started your business, then happiness would result from it? Have you ever felt that once you made a certain amount of money, or once you have a wife that loves you, or a husband that loves you, or once you have children, or once you lose weight, then you'll be happy? Well, I hate to break it to you, but many people who think this way eventually find out they're wrong. I would be doing you a huge disservice if I failed to let you in on this secret. And yes, you can attract next-level wealth with the right habits, but why deny yourself happiness? Wealth without fulfillment is emptiness. Let me help you achieve it all. What if we've had it backwards for all these years? What if happiness is the prerequisite for everything else? What if it is the prerequisite for success, for abundance, for prosperity, for weight loss, for passion, for intimacy, and for love? What if most of us don't really know how to be happy, but instead we think we'll figure it out once we get somewhere? Think of what we tell ourselves. All I need is to get my business up and running, and I'll be happy. Or, as soon as I buy that dream house, I'll be satisfied. You see, most of us let our desire for external things guide us. We think once we have that new house or that new job, then we'll be happy. But guess what? The excitement of external things fades. Have you ever thought, once I get a raise or to that next level of income, that is where the fun begins? Then it happens and you spend accordingly. Get some new stuff, upgrade your apartment, and think, I'm making more money now, so I'm happy. But then a few months pass and the additional income and what you bought no longer satisfies you. As much as I'm an advocate for growing your wealth and your success through the right habits, no amount of money will make you happy unless you find internal satisfaction. Combine that with more money, and it's time for next level and real fulfillment. A friend told me about a couple who for their entire adult lives wanted to move to the West Coast. The wife just wanted to watch the sunsets every day as they sank over the ocean horizon. So the couple saved up, worked for many years, and once they retired, they finally moved to California. So every night they got to sit out on their deck and watch the sun go down over the Pacific Ocean, and it was an unbelievable goal they had reached. Naturally, you would assume their lives were complete and they could live happily ever after, right? Wrong. After 18 months living in that house, they were fuming and decided, we need to get blinds installed on these windows. Every night the sun is glaring right through and blinding us when we're trying to cook. You see, the outside world can only give you temporary happiness. We all want that next level of income, the ideal weight, perfect health, a great lifestyle, more money, true love, intimacy, and passion. Trust me, I get the desires that exist and the accompanying perks. But all that goes away unless we learn how to be happy on the inside. And here's the crazy part about it. If we find happiness on the inside, not an easy task, then suddenly all those other things we want are more obtainable. When you learn to create happiness internally, those things become a byproduct of the happiness you're creating, which is the opposite of what most people think. Most people believe success, money, fast cars, and diamond rings come first, and then happiness will materialize. That is completely false and the source of so many people walking around depressed. So let's look at happiness and what I've learned about it through all my years of writing books, all of my successes and failures, reading other great books on success, and being friends with billionaires and presidents and world changers. From these experiences, I've created a list of 10 specific habits and thought processes that I think are the fastest and quickest way to happiness. As I always say, I just want to give you the recipes, the ingredients and instructions that get you to your definition of success the fastest. Happiness habit number 1. Define what happiness looks and feels like to you. Imagine we're sitting in a restaurant right now and I asked you this question. From the deepest part of you, what makes you happy? Would you have an answer? Do you know what it would be? I believe that's a hard question for all of us. And I think it is a difficult question because so many times we try and compare our definition of happiness to others. Just because someone else's definition of happiness is a sports car and a mansion doesn't mean it has to be your definition. Honestly, if you were to ask me that question just 5 years ago, I probably would have stumbled to come up with an answer. Back then, I don't think I was crystal clear on what happiness truly meant to me. It would be easy to say, being with my kids, and even though that is true, that was a default and not a truly thought out answer. But I want you to get crystal clear on what makes you truly happy. Take the time right now and think through or start writing down ideas about what makes your heart smile, your eyes brighter, and causes you to be alive with joy. What truly makes you happy? Come on, do this. Don't default to a few answers that have become your reflexive response. Think back to when you were a kid or earlier in your life. When did you feel at peace? What lit you up? What made you smile? Is it spending time in the woods with your kids playing games and breathing fresh air? Is it going to a sporting event or going fishing? Do you like being by the ocean and feeling the sand between your toes? I personally love being in the woods. I relish big trees and a mountain stream. And it's probably because I grew up in upstate New York and my grandfather took me fishing a lot. He was such a great role model and someone I loved dearly. When I'm around nature, I'm truly happy. If I were to take an entire day and go out into the wilderness with big trees and a beautiful clear running stream, that would provide me with an inexplicable sense of happiness. When I'm with my kids and when I feel like I'm guiding them through life the right way, that too fosters happiness. When I'm inspiring people to become their very best, like now I hope, when I'm teaching on stage and on camera, all these things give me a deep level of happiness. So what's on your list? More specifically, what's on your list today? If I were to have created this list 5 or 10 years ago, my answers would have been different. Some were materialistic and some were embarrassing. So make sure you're thinking about your present happiness. Also, don't confuse happiness with goals. I still have materialistic goals, financial goals, and achievement goals. I'm not stopping my evolution, but I know the difference between goals and what makes me happy. I want to make sure you do too. All happiness starts by thinking through and defining the term as it applies to your current life. So try this. Jot down things without overthinking them. Don't limit your list to things you do, but also include the thoughts that make you happy, blessings that you can be grateful for, activities that bring you joy. Write, write, and write some more. Then look back at your list and circle 3 to 5 items that you feel strongly about, and those are typically your top ones. Happiness habit number 2. Make the present your friend. And no, I don't mean the present underneath the tree at Christmas time. I'm talking about the present day, the right now, this very moment you are living in. You have to make it your friend. So many of us go through life looking forward to tomorrow, to next week, to next year, instead of making friends with the right now. We think to ourselves, when I get this promotion, when I start my own company, when my company's profitable, when my wife truly understands me, or my husband just gets me, when my kids are out of diapers, when they go off to college, when I lose weight, then and only then I'll be happy. That kind of thinking is just an excuse for pushing happiness off to some vague time in the future. But when we do that, guess what? It may never get here. That is why we have to live in the now. Why not decide to be happy now? When you say the words when and then too many times, as in, when I get that promotion, then I can finally relax and feel great about my life. All you're doing is putting your happiness on hold until tomorrow because you're mentally living in a time other than right now. How many of us are waiting to be happy until that one certain thing happens? What if we threw away that mindset and just made today our friend? What if today was an incredible day? What if we no longer lived in the past or the future, but rather decided to be happy right this second? What if we started doing more of the things that make us happy and focused more on the thoughts that bring us joy today? Right this moment, you can decide to do this. It's your choice. How many times do you get stuck thinking about what could go wrong in the future? How many times have you thought, when I do this, then this might happen next month or next year? Then what happens? You get on this slope of negative thinking and you just go snowballing down the hill of thinking what could possibly go wrong someday. You're predicting the future, and not only that, you're predicting a negative future. The truth is, you don't know where the future is going and how things are ultimately going to end up. Of course, living too far in the future with the wrong thoughts diminishes your happiness today. Choose the present and choose it now. Realize that each day happens for a reason and that each moment must be seized with a present mindset. As simple as this advice sounds, consider the implications. What if you appreciated being alive and healthy and all the opportunities that you have at this very moment? When you can let the past melt away, stop focusing on a fictional future and learn to live in the moment, that's where inner gratitude and inner happiness begin. As Eckhart Tolle wrote in his fabulous book, The Power of Now, when you live in the now, you will finally find inner peace and happiness. So no more delayed gratification. You have the right to be happy today. Happiness habit number 3. Stop overthinking. Have you ever heard the saying, paralysis caused by overanalysis? What stops us in our track from living the life we desire is simply overthinking. I've witnessed this repeatedly in so many different circumstances, especially starting or going to the next level in business and wealth. What ends up happening is we overthink, overanalyze, and find ourselves stuck. It doesn't matter what your goal is, you can overthink it to death. I've watched this in my real estate education classes for years. I'd go to an event and I'd meet people and shake my students' hands and sign books, and so many people would say to me, "You know what, Dean? I'm dying to do my first deal, but I'm not done reading contracts and I need to know every detail first. Before I get started, I need my MBA. Save up until after I have a nest egg, find a partner, or fill in the blank." And so much of what they are usually talking about is the stuff that I've never done. And I've done thousands of successful real estate deals. If there's a recipe for success, all you have to do is follow the recipe. There is no need to make a dish from scratch, right? Don't overthink things because you'll never do anything. I've seen single people who desperately want a romantic relationship overthink themselves right out of that relationship. Should I become involved with her? Well, I could try, but then she would end up straying. She could end up breaking my heart. Do we have the same religious beliefs or spiritual beliefs? If not, then that could really cause problems. You know what? It's better if I don't get involved. You give up without giving it a shot. What if that person was the person you were meant to be with and you ignored the chance because of overthinking? So obtain the knowledge you need to build confidence, but then don't get bogged down in endless questions, second thoughts, and circular analysis. If your heart is telling you to act, if your subconscious is telling you to go for it, stop the overthinking and start taking action. Happiness habit number 4. Focus on a positive outcome. This is a powerful way to bring happiness into your life and get what you want in advance. And I know it sounds simple, but I can't tell you how many times I've heard someone say, "Oh, Dean, you're too optimistic." Am I too optimistic? Or do I just understand how powerful our subconscious is? Listen, your energy is going to go in any direction you aim it. You get to choose if it is spent on the positive or the negative. I know so many people who focus on what could go wrong in life rather than what can go right. One day they may feel a little run down and they conjure worst-case scenarios. What if this really is me getting sick? What if it's the flu? I never got a flu shot. What if I have an illness that could kill me? I don't have health insurance. Man, I am in trouble. Guess what? People like this will talk themselves right into getting sick. Why not put all the energy into focusing on a positive outcome and perfect health and more wealth, happiness, and abundance? Concentrate on thoughts of good health and a long life. Consider the results of studies about driving on long roads with only one tree. Most, if not all, of the accidents on these roads involve someone running into that one tree. Because people may be rushing through traffic or lose control of the wheel and think to themselves, I don't want to hit that tree. I don't want to hit that tree. I don't want to hit that tree. And what do? They hit the darn tree. The world has programmed us to think a certain way about situations we face. When something comes up, our minds immediately want to go, oh no, this isn't good. What if this happens? Or what if this happens? Or, oh gosh, what if, what if? The antidote? Become a keen observer of your thoughts. It's worked for me. And now, when what-if thoughts try to sneak into my mind, I say, no, 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 I'm not going to let my mind go there. Yes, I could focus on the negative and be stressed and worried about what could happen, but I decided years ago that I was no longer going to do that. You can focus on what might go wrong, or you can focus on what might go right. Why not invest your energy in what can go right? I used to focus on the wrong outcomes, and this story from my personal hell illustrates the dangers of this focus. For years, I woke up at 2 o'clock in the morning because my mind was racing with thoughts. And for years, I just thought this early morning waking was a reason for my success. I'd wake up and I'd start thinking about all the things going on that day, and I'd think about what could go wrong, and I'd try to find solutions to them before the problems were reality. Half the time, I wouldn't be able to fall back asleep because I would get obsessed about these imaginary bad outcomes and become stressed. Then one day, I said to myself, no more. I'm going to start tricking my mind and my subconscious by changing those negative thoughts I have when I wake up. From now on, I'm only going to focus on positive outcomes to these situations rather than creating negative outcomes in my mind. And what happened? I was able to visualize success and happiness and finally started getting my much-needed sleep. It took some time to make the transition from negative to positive outcomes, but when I replaced that disempowering habit with the empowering habit, it eventually stuck. Trent Shelton is a former NFL player who is the founder of Rehab Time, where each week through social media, he delivers powerful, inspirational, and uplifting messages. Trent has transcended his career as a football player to become an amazing motivational speaker and inspirational leader. He may have been in the spotlight as a football player, but he has a much more visible and prominent role now as millions of people see his videos and posts each month. He gets tens of thousands of positive, uplifting posts from people expressing their gratitude for his dedication to their greatness. With so much exposure, though, comes some negativity. The haters. When I interviewed Trent, our conversations provided many great lessons, including his sharing his own happiness habit that helped him deal effectively with the pessimists and naysayers, both online and in his life. First, I've come to associate a hateful post from someone as a disillusioned fan who is unconsciously still in need of some hope or motivation. It's so easy to scroll down and see a post under a video I sent out that can immediately affect my mindset. I'm human, just like everyone else. But when I simply gave that negative post a new meaning, it created a new behavior in me. No longer did I see it as, I did something to create this. Rather, I see it as, this person still needs help, and hopefully he will come around. But I'm not in control of them. I'm only in control of what I do. I let the tens of thousands of positive posts from the people who get inspired by my words be my fuel. And to protect myself even further, I'm very picky about who I follow, what I do, what I watch, and honestly, even the conversations I have. I'm very selective about certain people when they call me, because I know certain people either want something, or they want to bring gossip, or they want to bring drama, so I always tell myself to protect my peace. So I will do what I must to put barricades between me and their negativity. Protect your peace every day and watch your happiness and joy grow. And I have another habit to start each day off the best I can. When I wake up, I put myself in the championship mode mindset, as I like to call it. I give thanks for the opportunity for life, for another day to give it my all. It's my biggest thing for protecting my confidence and protecting my peace, because so many times we don't realize the opportunity we have to give our greatness to the world every single day. God gave each of us greatness inside of us, and we can't share it and use it if we are not at peace. Do what you must, protect your peace, and show the world what you are made of. So be like Trent and don't let the naysayers in any area of your life bring you down. Switch it up and try to find how to give it a new meaning. Protect your peace are words Trent uses often, and so should you. In so many cases, suffering is a choice. Therefore, do what you must, create new habits, and avoid suffering whenever possible. You are amazing. Let the world see this incredible part of you every day. Happiness habit number 5, let go of specific outcomes. This is a game changer. It's not easy, but it's damn effective. Too often we predict what different outcomes should be and we get hung up on our predictions. If I put this money into this deal and I partner with this person, we should make X amount of money and here's exactly how it will look. Then if it doesn't turn out like that, happiness goes away. You think to yourself, that's not what I wanted. That's not what I predicted. This isn't right. Sometimes you order steak and the server brings you chicken and all of a sudden you're angry. This is not what I wanted. I can't believe they did this. Here's how we make the same mistake in relationships. We're going to be married next year and we're going on a honeymoon to Hawaii and this is the way it's going to be. And when it doesn't turn out that way, we immediately get angry or our joy in the relationship diminishes. Remember what Tony Robbins said. What if life happens for us, not to us? Imagine you're paddling downstream in a canoe and all of a sudden the current takes you off course. You could resist it and say, I have to paddle upstream against this strong current and get back on track as expected. But wouldn't that take a tremendous amount of effort? What if when our course is altered, instead of being angry, we said, what if this little change of direction is a strategic part of my next level of life? Maybe this is happening for me and not to me. Maybe I should just ride the current out and see where it goes. Many times when an entrepreneur starts a business, the original idea doesn't work. So then the entrepreneur changes course and finds success in a totally unexpected direction. For example, that's how Twitter was born, almost by accident. Twitter was originally started by its co-founders to be a podcast company where you could call a number and create a podcast. It wasn't even called Twitter. Then iTunes announced that it was going to make podcasting available on all major Apple devices, and suddenly Odeo, the company now known as Twitter, was screwed. They had brainstorm meeting after brainstorm meeting to think of a new direction for the company and eventually came across the idea we all know as Twitter. And that success would never have happened if the entrepreneurs had given up because their original concept didn't pan out. When you're fixated on riding the current to a specific outcome, you become unhappy when things don't work out. When you're mired in unhappiness, you're never going to be successful. Instead, you lose confidence and walk around depressed. After I learned this lesson, it changed everything in my life. If I start a business and it starts to go in a direction I didn't expect, I just ride the current. Maybe this is the direction that will lead me to success. When you let go of a very specific outcome, the heavy weight of expectation comes off your shoulders. You will become a different person immediately, and your happiness will skyrocket. Happiness habit number 6. Don't be afraid to fail. We were raised to think that failure is bad, but truthfully, failure is the cornerstone of success. I'm looking at a quote on the wall right now by Winston Churchill, and it reads, "The definition of success is going from failure to failure without losing your enthusiasm." When was the last time you embraced failure in your life? Usually, if you're not failing, that means you're not pushing yourself hard enough and you're not trying new things. It means you're stuck in a rut and you're just going with the flow or you're not straying from your well-worn routine. But here's the thing, you'll never achieve your goals on autopilot. So I say fail often and change the meaning of failure that is in your mind. I want you to be able to proudly say, I failed today. I tried something new. I ask my kids all the time, did you fail today? When they say no, I respond, well, you didn't step out of the box or you didn't try anything new. I'm trying to reprogram their perception of failure to help them perceive it as a prerequisite for success. When you embrace failure, you will no longer feel sad when something doesn't go as planned. I've asked hundreds of thousands of my clients through emails what's holding them back from getting started on their dreams. Fear of failure is a common answer. But what if you just got rid of that fearful attitude? When that happens, you replace your fear with an acceptance of changes in your life. Wayne Gretzky said it best, you miss 100% of the shots you don't take. Embrace failure as a necessary part of success and aim to do it daily. Happiness habit number 7. Let go of grudges. Another way of stating this habit is, try not to take things personally. I know this is a tough one, but when you hold a grudge, you are holding that inside of you at the expense of your happiness, health, and success. Have you ever held a grudge against a parent, boss, or relative, or somebody who just did something horrible to you, and you obsess about it all the time? Just so you know, that grudge isn't affecting the offending party. As much as you boil and stew, your grudge-filled thoughts don't harm a hair on anyone's head. They do hurt you and your future success. You have to let go of all grudges, which I know is easier said than done. Growing up, I had my own issues and craziness with my parents. I sometimes felt I was on my own and didn't have their support. Without anyone knowing, I held on to grudges for a long time. I dreamed about them, I thought about them, and I allowed them to make me resentful. But all this obsessing did was hold me back from that next level of happiness. Then one day, I just let go and said, I wouldn't be the man I am, I wouldn't be the father I am, I wouldn't be the motivator I am, had anything happened any other way. Those things happened exactly the way they were supposed to, and I forgive the people involved. Grudges gone. When I let those grudges go, my happiness rose to a new level. Letting go of past grudges was one of the most liberating things I'd ever done, and I urge you to look at your life and find the grudges you can release. If you do, you'll free yourself to be the best you possible. Happiness habit number 8, be grateful for what's in front of you. We all know that being grateful is the cornerstone of happiness. It's one of those things that you have to be consciously aware of daily. You could be struggling, need money, have debt or overdue bills, or going through a divorce, but there's always the opportunity to find gratitude for things in our lives. I know life can be a kick in the teeth sometimes, but gratitude can overcome anything, and the best way to start is by focusing on small things of which you're appreciative. You can be grateful for a smile from a stranger, a hug from your child, or a look from your spouse. Be grateful for living in a place where you can define yourself as you choose, where you enjoy the freedom to become your best self. Be grateful for the blue sky or the white clouds or the flowers or the green grass. Heck, be grateful for your heart beating and never having to think about it. Again, success without fulfillment and happiness is a massive failure. So I encourage you to spend your day finding gratitude in the small things and let your gratitude grow from there. When you can train yourself to be grateful for a simple lunch or for a hug, then these little things add up and you become more meaningfully grateful daily. Success habit number 9. Don't settle for good enough. Don't settle for things being just okay. This acceptance will take away your happiness in a flash. Don't say things like, my relationship is good enough. Instead say, my relationship might not be perfect, but I'm going to work hard at making it better. Strive for greatness in every part of your life. When you settle for just okay, whether it relates to income or a job or a relationship, you lose out on much of the joy life has to offer. Say no to being just okay. Get that terminology out of your life, because subconsciously, that means you're telling yourself, you're not good enough, you don't deserve better. Other people get to be happy and get to live life abundantly, but you don't. It's good enough for you just where you are. The heck with that. Stop telling yourself things are okay because you're subconsciously ruining your chances for happiness and for the joy and fulfillment that lie beyond. You don't have to say, my life is perfect right now. You could just be honest and say, it is okay today, but I'm going for more. And I know you are going for more, so keep going. Just okay is not good enough, not for my students, and not for anyone listening to this book. There is the next level of life, and it's your turn to grab it. Happiness habit number 10. Be part of something bigger. This is about seeking a spiritual connection or developing a relationship with God or any higher power. You must allow yourself to be part of something bigger than you are that lifts you to the next level of faith. Explore whatever type of spirituality fits your beliefs and traditions. It could be general spirituality, Zen Buddhism, organized religion, or your personal relationship with God. When you attach yourself to something bigger than yourself, your happiness is amplified. I know you bought this book to discover the habits that create wealth and abundance, and I urge you to go for it. Make all the money you desire, but I implore you to take this chapter seriously and make happiness the foundation of your life. It will make success come easier and faster in any area where you choose to apply these 10 happiness habits. If there's any chapter I'd urge you to listen to again, it's this one. That will help you commit these habits to memory and to heart. I also suggest that you implement each of the 10 habits gradually over the coming months. Maybe focus on one each week for the next 10 weeks. Now go smile. Chapter 10, The Quick Hacks to Success. This chapter is going to be like a lightning round on success hacks that you could adjust to fit your life in a moment's notice. Of course, there are thousands of habits, daily routines, or hacks which can help you along your journey to success. These are some of my favorites, and you can incorporate them into your life easily, quickly, and with a far greater impact than you might think. Take creative time daily. We often get into ruts or routines, and we live the same schedule day after day. Sometimes we feel like we're on a hamster wheel, or that we're just running in place on a treadmill. When this happens, your creativity, your new ideas, your dreams, your visions, your inventions don't get a chance to flourish. Set aside 10 to 30 minutes each day and just think creatively. Don't respond to email, don't read over your to-do list, don't text or look at social media. Just think. I do this after I work out in the morning and before my kids wake up. I focus on what's next for my life. What should I say in my books? What new idea can I share with people today that will have the most power to transform lives? What's my next TV show going to be? As you allow yourself to exercise your creativity, you'll get the juices flowing. I don't care if you think you're not creative. You are. If you're like most people, you don't give yourself credit for all your innovations. You've invented a new relationship, a business, a career, a game you play with your kids, a more efficient way of doing your yard work, a character that makes your spouse laugh. Nothing in life comes to us unless we think of it first. Look around you. That lamp, that chair, that painting. Somebody thought about them first by being creative, and then they became reality. If you forget to take creative time every day, you're not feeding part of your soul, and you don't want it to wither. Sometimes I'll do a whole day of just being creative, where I spend time finding those things that spark my mind and fire me up and keep me looking forward to that next level of life. All of us have our own definition of creative time. It can be painting, writing, sculpting, inventing, digital design, or 1,000 other things to get your creative juices flowing. Whatever it is, schedule the time and do it daily. Observe other jobs for gratitude. What the heck does that mean? I know we spoke about gratitude earlier, but I want to give you some additional ideas for being aware of it and expressing it. Whether you are expressing thanks for something big or small, you need to find a way to get this feeling out into the world. But sometimes it's hard, right? You're busy, you're doing 10 things at once, and finding gratitude isn't always at the top of your mind. So what I do is observe other people's jobs to create a kind of gratitude consciousness. I don't care what you do for a living, I know it can get stressful. More than that, it can be overwhelming, or it can make you feel like you're doing something that's trivial or mundane, and that you're not making a difference. So when I see people hard at work, getting their hands dirty, I mentally say thank you to them. I send my thoughts of gratitude and appreciation. Here's an example. I live in Phoenix, and in the summer it gets brutally hot. I was driving around recently and saw five guys working up on a roof in 106-degree heat. So I looked at them, and I sent love. I'm not trying to be foo-foo or new age here, but this is just what I do. I think to myself, good for them. Thanks, guys. They're taking care of their families, they're making a house in my neighborhood look better, and at the same time, it reminds me that I'm so grateful for what I get to do for a living. Every day I see hardworking people doing difficult jobs, and I feel gratitude for my life and send that appreciation to others. Set gratitude alarms. Since cell phones can do pretty much everything in life except go to the bathroom for you, I love using the daily alarm to remind me to stay grateful. This is a cool little trick I learned from my good friend Brendan Burchard. In the craziness of our day, not only can we forget to be grateful, we can get frustrated, overwhelmed, annoyed, or even pessimistic or unable to smile. So I set the alarm on my phone to go off every day at three different times, accompanied by a description that pops up when the alarm goes off. At 10 a.m. the alarm sounds and it reads, "Be optimistic, enthusiastic, and loving." At 3 p.m. it goes off again and reads, "You can handle anything." And then again at 7 p.m. when I am typically at home with my family, I see, "You are truly blessed. Be grateful." I can't tell you how many times I've needed those exact messages at those exact times. These little reminders typically make me take a 30-second break from whatever is going on and appreciate everything I have in this world. And as a bonus, the alarm and message often snap me into a better state. Stash cash. Trust me on this one. You must make it a habit to put money away. I don't care if you make $500 a week or $500,000 a week, save some of it. There are certain people in the world, and maybe you know some, who will spend as much money as they make and more. If they make a dollar, they're going to spend $1.25. But you've heard this advice before. Parents, financial advisors, and spouses may have all insisted that you start saving. This success hack, however, isn't as much about money as it is about confidence. When you have money put away, it does something for your confidence. You know that in the back of your mind that you can weather any storm. If you have a bad month, a bad 3 months, break your leg, can't work, you can handle it. You possess peace of mind knowing that you and your family are going to be okay until you're back on your feet. On the other hand, if you have no savings, you're always going to worry about your future, even if only subconsciously. And that is the worst feeling in the world. All it does is tug away at your confidence and peace of mind. You'll start thinking, if I have another bad couple of months, I won't be able to pay my rent. I have nothing saved for my retirement, and I have nothing in savings. I have nothing to fall back on. So I encourage you, no matter what your income, make it a habit of stashing something away every single week of your life, even in the bad weeks. It's not about the money you're stashing away as much as it's about the feeling of confidence that helps you make better decisions moving forward. Have you ever heard the phrase, scared money makes no money? For me, this is true. If you have no money stashed away, you're going to make decisions very cautiously, avoiding risk to feel safe. Because of this, you might miss out on taking an educated gamble that could lead to a big payoff. If you have no money stashed away, you're staying at a job that you hate because you have no cushion. But if you stash money away for 3 or 4 years and your boss comes in and finally treats you so badly that you can't take it, you at least have the option to quit. But if there's no money, you'll swallow your pride and take the abuse. I don't care if you save $10 a week, $100 a week, or $1,000 a week. Whatever amount you can put away, do it. It will give you more than just a savings account. Spoil yourself randomly. This might seem to contradict my previous point, but hear me out. You can save and spoil yourself. You just have to choose wisely about how you spoil yourself. I don't have hundreds of cars or thousands of shoes because to me, that's a waste. But I do spoil myself and my family with the things that really matter to us and that we derive value from. For example, I know I spend 3 times as much as the average person on our household groceries because everything in my house is organic. I don't want my family eating food chock full of chemicals. I will occasionally take the family on incredible trips, stay at the best places, and we pamper ourselves. I love experiencing a great meal with my family no matter the cost. These are my rewards for my hard work and they make me want to achieve even greater success. So when I say spoil yourself, that's what I'm talking about. Treat yourself to things that evoke a positive emotion, and if this spending creates a lasting memory at the same time, wonderful. If you stash cash and spend less on things that don't mean much to you, when it's time to spoil yourself on the things that really matter, you'll have the money to do it. Spoiling yourself can empower you, give you glimpses of what could be the norm, and push you harder to implement strategies and make decisions to better your life. Invest in yourself. I truly believe that when we die, we stop learning. When it comes to life, we're either climbing or we're sliding. If you want to make more money, if you want to have more money in retirement, more time for you, more freedom, then never stop investing in yourself. Gaining more knowledge will transform your life experiences into wisdom, and wisdom will provide you with the insight and guidance to reach your next level. I currently spend well over $100,000 a year on continued learning. And your listening to this far shows me that we are kindred spirits. But please remember what I shared earlier about bad advice. Make sure you are learning from someone who's done what you want to accomplish on a grander scale. Get a mentor or a coach. Do an internship. Digest knowledge from those who have the path and the plan to the success you desire. Do you have someone to model yourself after or help keep you accountable? If not, go to www.thebetterlife.com and click on the coaching tab and give us a call to see if we could work together. One of my certified success coaches can 100% help you on your journey to the next level. Draw energy from your frequent smiles. I am optimistic and I love people. It's as simple as that. But I know it can be a challenge to maintain this positive, friendly outlook. Sometimes we get so busy and caught up in our own worlds that we put our heads down and ignore people who we don't think matter because we're too busy to notice them. The delivery truck driver, the building custodian, and the restaurant server may go unnoticed. But then, someone with influence walks into the room, and only then do we put on our friendly faces. I promise you, I have never in my life been one of those people who treated a server badly. I'm always nice and polite. But I decided 10 years ago that I'm not just going to be polite. I'm also going to be consciously aware to smile and make eye contact with everybody I interact with. This isn't just a decision to be nice. It's a choice to plug into the power source provided by an upbeat, human-centric attitude. Now, you can't be on all the time. But you also don't want to be a person who treats somebody well because of what you think you can get out of them. Instead, wouldn't it be better to make an effort to appreciate everyone daily and give a quick smile as often as you can? Think about it. How much energy does it take? Not much at all, yet it will actually improve your state of mind and boost your energy while potentially making someone else's day. Find the good in the bad. If you can create a habit to find good when things go wrong, your life will be transformed. So many people have things go wrong in their lives and they wallow in them for years. Until someday down the road they say, you know, it's a good thing that relationship didn't work because I found the love of my life. Or, you know what? It was actually good that my first business failed because I learned from it and that experience helped my next business succeed. How many people do you know who have avoided committing to relationships because they had their hearts broken years ago? Or do you know someone who won't start a new company because a business venture failed years ago? I believe everything that happens in our life happens for us, and there is a lesson and there is some good in all of it. If you can create a habit of finding that good sooner rather than later, you'll change your life. Bounce back fast. I've been successful for lots of reasons, but my ability to bounce back from setbacks fast is near the top of the list. Why not be the person among your peers, coworkers, or employees that rebounds from failure or overcomes obstacles faster than anyone else? I have self-programmed this habit or hack of fast rebounding, and it has paid huge dividends. How long do you linger on things when they go wrong? How long do you play the situation over and over again in your mind? Learn from it, but pick up the pieces and move on with that experience in hand. The people who fail the fastest are the ones who find the solution the quickest. Think solution, not problem. It's unfortunate that when something goes wrong, people obsess about why it happened, whose fault it was, and why me. Honestly, what good is that thinking in most cases? Yes, learn from it, but train your brain to be solution-oriented. Let's take the simplest example on the planet. What happens when a glass of milk spills? Yes, you can obsess and say, how did that fall? Who made it fall? Will it stain the floor? Will it smell? Or think something along the lines of, why always me? I'm in a hurry and don't need this. But someone with a solution-oriented thought process would simply get a towel, pick up the glass, and get a new glass of milk. Use your energy wisely, learn from mistakes, but then move on with fast solutions. Develop a habit that when stuff goes wrong, you immediately ask, how do I fix it? What steps can I take right now to lessen the damage? Make it a habit to put all your energy into the solution, not on why it happened or who's to blame. Ask happy people. Every time I see people who are always in a good mood, always smiling, and always find the good in things, I strike up a conversation with them. I'll say, what do you do to be happy? As you might have guessed by this point, I love asking people what makes them happy. Sometimes you get a funny one-liner as an answer, and you just have to chuckle and be on your way. Other times you might get a thoughtful answer that has a lasting impact on you. When you see happy people, talk to them and find out what they are doing to stay that way. My wonderful friend John laughs more than any single person I know. He owns and runs a multi-million dollar company, has tons of obligations and pressure, and has 3 young children. But he finds the simplest things funny and his laughter is contagious. So of course, I asked him what makes him happy. He told me, I personally think every day how lucky I am to have been born when I was, to live where I live, and to have the family I have. So as you see, nothing groundbreaking. John doesn't possess a magic happiness button. He found a way to be happy with a routine of gratitude. Go to your happy place. I touched on this in the happiness habit chapter, but this success habit boils it down to one particular happy place or thought. Sometimes we find ourselves in funks, and we need quick hacks to set us free from our negative moods and set our minds and souls straight. For me, it's thinking